you have a decision to make in the city of Seattle. You know your primary ballots due, right? I've been telling you this about 3 weeks before your primary ballots due, and your current mayor is not an option. Ed Murray's not running for re-election. We're helping you get to know the people who would like to replace him, and today I'm with Carrie Moon. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good to have you here. I know you as an urban planner and as an engineer. What don't we know about you that we ought?
Well, first, since you brought it up, of the 21 people on the ballot, my name is first, so that feels like good karma.
How'd you do that?
I don't know. Just good luck.
Uh-huh. Okay. Carrie Moon. that could be turned into a slogan. Carrie Moon, number one. You said that you would take no corporate money for this campaign. You're a political first-timer, right?
Yep.
Still true? No corporate money?
Still true. Yep. I believe that the influence of corporations over our democracy is corroding our whole system. And I helped make the Honest Election Seattle plan work, and I've been working on something similar at the state level that we just launched called the Democracy Hub. So this is a principle that means a lot to me, that democracy should be run by the people, for the people, of the people, and corporations should stay the heck out of it.
Self-funding.
Somewhat. I mean, I'm raising money, but I'm also matching with my own money because it allows me to have more time with voters out talking to people about real issues.
The issue I most associate with you, you won't be surprised, is, you know, as you and I speak, there is a tunnel growing underneath the Seattle waterfront coming together. You fought that tunnel. You also didn't want a big above-ground highway on the waterfront. You said, let's just knock down the Alaskan Way Viaduct and keep it down. Why did the city and the state not get Carrie Moon's waterfront vision?
Well, you know, in some ways they did get it. So the waterfront is happening. We are building 22 acres of civic space in the heart of our downtown, which I helped plan and launch and envision and build the public will for. Incredibly proud of that, and I cannot wait to see that come to fruition. And regarding the transportation solution, you know, at one point in this process, we almost won because we were proposing about $2 billion worth of investments in additional transit and street improvements to get people in and out of the city. And at one point, the head of the city, the state, and the county DOT all said this was the best plan and better than any other plans on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And the politics around mega projects and, you know, Chamber of Commerce and who the governor has to listen to keep people happy really kind of took control of the situation, and they ended up not pursuing the recommended alternative.
Well, it is a state highway. 99 is a state highway. Right. I-5 is cloggy. How are we going to get people and goods through the city?
Well, if you look at who uses the viaduct, it's primarily people coming in and out of downtown. And so our solution was aimed at that. How do we get people in and out of downtown on transit, on street improvements? And, you know, the tunnel is a bypass highway, so you still haven't really solved that problem. And if we had invested in transit the way we were proposing 10 years ago, you know, we might not be facing some of these problems we have now. But let me just say that, you know, the tunnel is happening. It's, you know, it's coming, and the discussion's over at this point. But
you're not plugging the hole.
No, nope, not plugging the hole.
What about, as mayor, would you toll the hell out of the tunnel so we don't drive it? You want fewer cars on the road.
You know, if you've raised tolls too high, that just pushed people onto city streets, which have not been improved, adding to the congestion problem. So we do have to find the right balance. If we're going to have the piece of infrastructure, we might as well use it efficiently.
We, of course, went to KUOW's Facebook page to solicit questions, great questions at KUOW.org and on Facebook. And Audra says, number one, fix our roads. What is your plan to improve the roads in this city? The bottleneck on I-5 or on the convention center should be addressed. That is a chunk of your constituency that, you know, you're thinking transit. They're thinking roads, roads, roads.
I think if you just look at the math of it, the rate at which we're growing, more and more people are moving here. And so we have to use the road space we have as efficiently as possible. We can't add new roads at this point. And so if you look at what kind of systems move the most people, it's light rail, it's transit, it's bikes, it's pedestrians, and then it's cars. So we have got to invest in the modes that move the most people in the least amount of space. And that's the way to solve the congestion problem.
On KUOW's Facebook page, the issue that our listeners named Seattle's top challenge is the cost of housing, no surprise. How would your approach be different from Mayor Murray's approach to the cost of housing?
So Mayor Murray has had this approach of the free market will do what it will, and let's just get the developers, you know, to build 5 to 10% of their housing as affordable housing, and that should be enough. And that is nowhere near enough. We need much bolder, more transformative solutions. So I'm proposing three kind of distinct approaches. First, we have got to put a tax on the speculation that's part of driving up demand for housing in our city. So corporations and outsiders, non-residents, are investing in our housing because it's the hottest return on investment out there.
Even what's wrong with that? Everybody wants their investment to grow.
I don't think so, because that's what's driving up property taxes, and it's what's driving up rents, and it's what's pushing people out of the city. And so we have got to curtail that activity and focus on housing for people who live here. Second, so we have to build a lot more affordable housing. The only cities that don't have this crisis have a huge percentage of their housing in public and nonprofit ownership because it dampens the volatility in the market and it provides that much more housing for, you know, working people. And then we have to look at building the missing middle, all the types of housing like row houses and duplexes and backyard cottages, congregate housing, those kind of types of housing that could be affordable that the private market would build if we made them more viable and legal in our city.
Upzone Seattle's single-family neighborhoods?
Appropriately, with a scalpel, you know, not an axe. I think we need to really look at what fits in neighborhoods. There's a lot of housing types like duplexes, like row houses that are a lot denser than what we're building now that people would welcome if we had a range of options on the table. People could sort of help understand what kind of growth they need to accept and what works in their neighborhood. And I don't think we'll have a problem coming to an agreement once we open up the toolkit of the different kinds of models.
You talked about speculators. I'm guessing, well, this is a question from Clint. Would you consider a vacancy/empty home tax like Vancouver, BC?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you're into
that.
Both.
Okay. And looking at an additional real estate excise tax on luxury properties, whatever we can do to stop the speculation that is taking housing away from people who want to live here.
Has there been a booming American city where people don't get priced out? I mean, what city is your model?
Well, there are cities in Europe that have built a lot of affordable housing that show that it dampens the overall volatility. And then some of the luxury vacation destinations have solved this problem. Aspen, Colorado, for instance. In the 70s, they realized all these rich people are buying up our housing stock to come ski for 2 weeks a year. That's not working for the people who live and work here. So they started building a lot of affordable housing, and they limit who's allowed to buy housing in their city, and it's worked out pretty well. They're a small city with a unique condition, but it's a model that we could look at.
I'm talking with Carrie Moon, who's running for the mayor of Seattle. She's a political first-timer, as was Mike McGinn when he was mayor. McGinn is running again, and he told me that his inexperience sometimes worked against him. Why should we elect another political first-timer?
Well, I'm not inexperienced. I'm a professional urban planner. I've been working on civic issues for 20 years. I've been working with all the departments in the city and with the advocacy arena for 20 years. So I have a lot of experience with how do the levers of government work? Where do decisions get made? What are the forces affecting power? I understand that in a way that I don't think he did at the time. But more importantly, I'm a more collaborative leader. I work with people to set a shared vision and build a unified effort towards that vision. That's the way I operate. That's why the People's Waterfront Coalition built as much momentum as it did, because it was a collaboration across lots of organizations inside and outside of city government. And that's the way I lead. And he's a much more combative us versus them sort of kind of manager. And that's not my approach. Let's all do this together because we all have this shared common goal.
Let's talk about police. This has been an ongoing problem. Police overuse of force, the appearance of bias, as you well know. And Ness on our Facebook page asks, what are you going to do about the ongoing refusal of the SPD to undertake any smidgen of meaningful reform and drastically reduce deaths by police bullets? I don't know that's your take on it, but how do you respond?
I challenge your phrase, the appearance of bias, because I think we all need to address we have real bias in our society. It's not just in the police. We have systemic racism. We were all born into it. We're all, you know, maybe we didn't invent it. Maybe we're not actively perpetuating it, but we're part of it. And so we all have to acknowledge that that is reality in our city, and it gets expressed in lots of ways, and we see it most visibly in the police department. So I just want to establish that as the ground.
Yeah.
And
I'm talking about the federal monitor, you know, the federal police finding, the DOJ finding of overuse of force, and they didn't say bias policing, but the appearance of anyway. But you're saying that bias is a real thing.
Yep,
there's no
Let's
question.
Admit
there.
It's real. Yeah. And then I think we need to just keep going farther. We need to do a lot more racial equity training. We need to do a lot more de-escalation training, and have people have alternatives to alternatives to use of force.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at the Community Policing Commission and what their role can be in shining a spotlight on things that we think we're doing well, but we're actually not. We need to make sure we fund them and we listen to them. And we need to keep going with the alternatives to incarceration, especially for youth offenders. There's about 20 different things we need to be doing actively with our police department and in the broader community to reduce racial bias and use of force. And I would be committed to funding all of them and making them a top priority, because I feel like with Block the Bunker, with No New Youth Jail, and now with the emergence of anger, frustration, activism around the Charlena Lyles killing, we are in a civil rights moment in Seattle, and it is time to make the changes that we know we need to make now.
I've been asking this of, still on the subject of race, asking this question of other mayoral candidates on Facebook. Zach says, Seattle's biggest challenge is addressing its own white supremacy. There's racism everywhere. Do you think Seattle is especially institutionally racist?
I think maybe not, but I think we pretend we're good. Mm. We pretend, we're all liberals mostly, and we give ourselves a pass because we don't express overt interpersonal malice. We don't have the KKK here, so we think we're fine. But we do have a lot of institutions that manage to privilege the interests of white people and people with power and money again and again over people of color and people who are lower economic status. And we keep perpetuating that system. So I think it's time that we confront that, understand how it works, understand what are the barriers to access for people of color, understand, how to share power across race, class, and gender, how to look at all our investments that we're making with public money using a racial equity lens of how can we make sure the money we're spending now is reversing decades or centuries of inequality, and just make commitments to it in every single arena of government.
I get this question from friends of mine because I live on Mercer Island, and I have friends who say I shouldn't have abandoned the Seattle school system. And I live on Mercer Island partly because I really like the school that my kids go to. And you have your kids go to private school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find any you want Seattle to be more equitable? Your kids are in private school. Do you find any contradiction in that?
Absolutely. It's been a big conflict in my family, in my life, ever since we made that decision. But every family has its own unique conditions. My kids live in two houses. And the choice we were, and neither house has a car, and the choice we were offered was across the Ship Canal. And there was just no way we were going to send our kids to a school across the Ship Canal every day and make that trip four times a day. And so we thought, what are our alternatives? A place that everybody can walk to. And so we chose private school. But we spent elementary school years in the public school system and loved it. And if we had been offered a choice that worked for our family's needs, we would have stayed. But that said, I think the core problem of the public school system in Seattle is lack of funding because of McCleary, and we have to solve that problem at its root. We have got to get sufficient funding into the school system so they can offer the kinds of programs and the kinds of facilities and, the education kids need, because every kid deserves to have a great start in life through a great education.
Well, maybe we'll both come back. Talking with Carrie Moon, who's a candidate for mayor, some UW researchers just reported if Seattle brings hockey or basketball to Key Arena instead of Soto, it'll be kissing off millions of dollars in revenue. By the way, that study was commissioned by the Soto Arena folks. But what do you want to do, if anything, with more pro sports around here?
I think it would be fantastic if we could bring the Sonics back. I love basketball. I love watching basketball. It's my favorite sport to watch. And I think both proposals have a lot of pros and cons, and I lean towards Key Arena because I believe in preserving industrial land, and I believe that Seattle Center is a great venue for civic activity. But it comes with a really steep challenge of how do we get people there, given the Mercer mess and given the lack of transit to that neighborhood until light rail opens. So it comes with a lot of challenges, but I would like to make sure we're trying to tackle all those challenges and come up with a good solution there. If we can't, I would look at SoTo, making sure we are not building the whole entertainment district, just the arena and preserve industrial land.
Carrie Moon, this may sound ridiculous, but I have personally heard people confuse you with Molly Moon, the ice cream maker. Have you heard that as well?
Yes.
Go on.
I would love it if Molly Moon were my sister.
Uh-huh.
She's not.
Is this bad for your campaign or fantastic for your campaign?
I like
Vote
people's,
Molly Moon.
Vote ice cream.
Yeah.
Yes, it's great for my campaign. And it's funny because I do have a sister named Molly Moon, but she lives in Indiana.
No kidding. I bet she really gets mixed up. That's why she lives in Indiana, not here. Okay, because I would vote for a bowl of honey lavender for mayor, so I was curious what you thought about that. Anything that our time's about up. What did I just blow it by not asking you about?
You know, I think the difference between having an outsider who's skilled and a professional urban planner who really understands urban growth and urban development and how to get ahead of growth, how to have compact, equitable growth. I think we're crying for that in our city right now. We've had a lot of mayors who don't quite understand that, who play politics a different way. And I think people are ready for real solutions because people feel this unease, like, am I going to belong here in the future? Is this still my city? Who's in charge? How is it changing so quickly? And I think having more of a vision and a concrete action plan and someone who knows about urban growth at the helm, I think would be really welcome by people.
Carrie Moon, would like your vote for a mayor of Seattle, and we're about 3 weeks from your primary ballot being due. Carrie, thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you.